content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Woodward for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Week magazine. Today's program is generously underwritten by W.G. Alexander. At W.G. Alexander & Associates, they take pride in providing clients with the best legal counsel by concentrating on elder law, asset protection, and estate planning. They can be contacted at 919-256-7000. We're reading this week from the November 5th, 2021 issue of the Week magazine. The cover drawing this week shows Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg. He's in his typical blue jeans t-shirt, and he's kind of got a shrug and a oh well expression on his face. In his hand, he's holding a can of gasoline that he's pouring. It's got the Facebook emblem on the side of it, and from where the gas is coming out of the can, there's a long streak of fire back to a city street scene where everything is just going up in flames. The headline is Spreading Hatred: What the Facebook Papers Reveal About the Platform's Incendiary Influence. We'll get that main story in just a moment, but we'll start with the related editor's letter. Over the past decade, Facebook and Bitcoin have grown up together. Bitcoin was created in 2009. Facebook went public in 2012. And they are two branches of the same stream. Both represent the highest hopes of the early internet flooding over their banks. The promise of technology was that it would democratize everything from media to finance, removing the gatekeepers. And oh boy, has it done that. In finance, democratization initially meant cutting the power of banks and brokerages. Now Bitcoin devotees routinely talk about taking down the Federal Reserve and the nation state. In media, it's the hashtags trending on Facebook, not the old news networks, that define the national mood and set the agenda. The gatekeepers who remain are hanging on for dear life, watching Facebook and pulling up meme stocks on their terminals in hope of keeping up. For a long time, the rueful joke in the media business has been that the industry now has one editor-in-chief, Twitter. Many of the gatekeepers ought not to be missed, but now we are seeing what happens when they are gone. In their place, as everyone who has thought about democracy over centuries has recognized, rush in con artists and professional manipulators. This is what's happening both in the financial markets and the market of ideas. Billions of dollars of Bitcoin trade in a marketplace driven by speculators who can drive up prices and then turn around and sell their supply at will. On Facebook, conspiracy mongers around the world have mastered the art of gaming the algorithm with polarization as their prime product. Eventually, it is likely that a new civic and financial order will emerge, bubbles burst, conspiracy theories collapse under their own weight, guardrails get put in. Once I would have called that a near certainty, but these days the market for certainty is very thin, and betting on the center holding can feel very lonely. That was from Mark Gimine, the managing editor. And the first main story is, in fact, how Facebook amplifies anger and lies. What happened? Facebook was hit this week with a tidal wave of revelations from leaked internal documents, which depict the social media giant as a malignant force that knowingly prioritized profit over public good. A consortium of 17 media organizations released dozens of news stories culled from thousands of pages of reports, memos, discussion threads, and other documents provided by Francis Haugen, a Facebook product manager turned whistleblower. The documents revealed disillusioned employees expressing dismay when CEO and founder Mark Zuckerberg and other top executives ignored Facebook's own internal research on its damaging social effects. Zuckerberg, employees said, would not listen to internal or external calls for reform because he prizes reader engagement and ad revenue above all else. It's not normal for a large number of people in the Make the Site Safe team to leave saying, hey, we're actively making the world worse, FYI, wrote one employee on an internal message board. Another wrote, history will not judge us kindly. The document showed that Facebook intentionally amplified divisive content in its news feed, promoting posts that provoked clicks on the angry emoji for years because they increased user engagement, even though they were more likely to contain misinformation and leave users divided and depressed, as a company researcher wrote. Documents depict how lax oversight in non-English-speaking countries such as India allowed the proliferation of hate speech and disinformation that fomented political violence. In the U.S., the documents revealed Facebook executives deliberately allowed right-wing websites such as Breitbart and the Daily Wire to violate content rules by posting false or incendiary material, for fear that sanctioning them would unleash retaliation by conservatives or former President Trump. In some documents, employees expressed disgust about Facebook's role in the January 6th Capitol invasion, and it's used by QAnon followers and Trump supporters to spread misinformation about the election and calls to violence. We've been fueling this fire for a long time, and we shouldn't be surprised it's now out of control, wrote one staffer. In a call with financial analyst, Zuckerberg called the news coverage a coordinated effort to selectively use leaked documents to create a false picture about our company. The same day, Haugen told British lawmakers that Facebook's algorithms promote and reward anger and hate and called for more aggressive regulation of Zuckerberg's empire. Until the incentives change, Facebook will not change, she said. What the editorial said. The revelations about how Facebook platforms can spread misinformation and undermine democracy keep coming, said the Sacramento Bee. Now we learn how its lax security safeguards following last year's election allowed the undemocratic lunacy that led to the storming of the U.S. Capitol on January 6 to fester. Facebook deserves all the public scorn it has earned. The site has wreaked havoc in vulnerable communities around the world, said the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Facebook has more than 2.8 billion global users, but applies only 16% of its monitoring efforts outside the U.S. The results can be catastrophic. The site allowed the proliferation of anti-Muslim hate speech in India that an internal report linked to deadly riots. A test news feed set up by a Facebook researcher there became a near constant barrage of polarizing nationalist content, misinformation, and violence and gore. In other countries, the site was used by drug cartels to find new members and by human traffickers to lure in women. What the columnist said. The documents leave little room for doubt about Facebook's crucial role in advancing the cause of authoritarianism in America and around the world, said Adrian LeFranc in TheAtlantic.com. Employees alarmed at Facebook's lack of a moral compass pleaded with company leaders to address how its algorithm amplify extremism and misinformation and encourage hatred and polarization. Again and again, they were ignored. The truth is that with billions of users, any effort by Facebook to screen out repellent content is always going to be a game of whack-a-mole, said Jim Garrity in NationalReview.com. If you give the whole world a blank canvas, some will make art and some will create horrible, hateful stuff. Is that really Facebook's fault? How could it possibly control what users post? It's hard not to be cynical that these revelations will make any real difference, said Jacob Silverman in NYMag.com. After all the previous front page blockbusters, congressional hearings, and Zuckerberg's robotic promises to do better, Facebook's power and profitability continue to grow. With $9.2 billion in profits last quarter and no real competition. With only Zuckerberg's whims dictating its direction, the public sphere seems to be helpless to tame Facebook, and our lawmakers are similarly useless. There's only one way to reach Zuckerberg, said Greg Benzinger in the New York Times. If advertisers start paring back their spending, it may be a tall order to ask companies to deny themselves access to 3.6 billion marketing targets. But if aligning with a site facilitating human trafficking, ethnic cleansing, and vicious cartels isn't sufficient to give advertisers pause, it's hard to imagine what would. Our controversy of the week, supply chain shortages. Are we buying too much stuff? Most explanations of the supply chain crisis is that have emptied store shelves across the U.S. portray the problem as really complicated, said Lee Schaefer in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. But the root cause is simple, too much demand. Yes, the global supply chain has become overwhelmed partly because of an intricate interplay of COVID-related manufacturing shutdowns abroad, labor shortages at ports and in trucking, shipping container traffic flow, and a dozen other factors. But the primary driver of extended delays in delivery is that Americans have been buying stuff in huge, historic quantities. The pandemic started this phenomenal buying spree, said Terry and Ewan in Vox.com. When Americans found themselves locked down in March 2020, they used the money they could no longer spend in restaurants, hair salons, or hotels to go online and use the simple touch of a button to order exercise equipment, lawn furniture, computers, appliances, TVs, gaming consoles, book shoes, and myriad other distractions. Stimulus checks only fueled this national addiction to the point that U.S. retail sales are 5% higher than they were last year and a whopping 17% higher than in December 2019. Experts say supply chains will remain snarled into 2023 unless we break the cycle of thoughtless buying. Hear that, America? The supply chain crisis is all your fault, said James Freeman in the Wall Street Journal. You might think that President Joe Biden would be held at least partly responsible for this new era of scarcity after he handed out astronomical sums through COVID relief packages that fueled demand even while his extended unemployment checks deepened severe labor shortages. But his administration and its allies would rather blame the shallow materialistic citizenry for wanting plentiful goods and services. The White House's messaging to worried Americans has been intentionally insulting, said Kaylee McGee White in WashingtonExaminer.com. Chief of Staff Ron Klain last week retweeted an economist who dismissed the supply crisis as a high-class problem, while Press Secretary Jen Psaki sarcastically lamented the tragedy of the treadmill that's delayed, as if only people suffering from this crisis were affluent home gym owners. But millions of working families are watching food, gas, and other prices soar and wondering if they have enough for groceries this month. Usually shortages are an indication of a recession, said Jordan Weitzman in Slate.com, but our economy is booming. and the U.S. is now actually importing more physical goods than ever before. That buying binge is a direct result of Biden administration's wise decision to protect Americans' incomes during the pandemic. If Christmas shopping is a bit frustrating this year, that's surely a small price to pay for having avoided another Great Depression. Easy for you to say, said Jim Garrity in NationalReview.com. The Denver public school system is struggling to get enough milk for breakfast and lunch, and small businesses can't get the goods they need to sell to stay afloat. It's one thing having to settle for your third favorite brand of Greek yogurt, said Amanda Mull in TheAtlantic.com. It will be another when necessities such as food and medicine become scarce because they're stuck in a global traffic jam behind containers filled with $100 throw pillows. Americans have been trained to be consumers, but if we want to do our part as citizens to keep the shortages from getting worse, we should reevaluate what we really need and stop shopping. We've got our Good Week, Bad Week piece here. It was a good week for the bully pulpit after Sheriff Grady Judd of Polk County, Florida, responded to a big surge in homicides by urging citizens to chill out, drink a 7-Up, eat a moon pie, quit murdering people, adding, "I know that's a novel idea for some people." It was a good week for ballot integrity after the Washington Post found that of 11 dead voters, former President Trump and his allies claimed voted by mail in the 2020 election, 7 are still alive. 4 were recently deceased, and their ballots were sent in by family members who were registered Republicans who apparently voted for Trump. It was a good week for none of the above after the U.S. issued its first passport with an X gender designation. The State Department said it would add a third option on gender for all applications next year. But it was a bad week for space tourism after Space Adventures, the world's premier private spaceflight company, canceled a planned trip aboard SpaceX's Dragon for want of passengers willing to pay millions of dollars. It's a bad week for brain teasers after an alternate juror in the fraud trial of Theranos founder Elizabeth Holmes was dismissed for playing Sudoku in the jury box. The juror claimed that the puzzle doesn't interfere with me listening and that I need to do something with my hands. It's a bad week for what robocalls hath wrought. After a hiker missing for 24 hours on Colorado's highest mountain ignored multiple phone calls to his cell phone from a rescue team because he didn't recognize the number. After the hiker showed up safe, search authorities advise people who get lost in the wilderness to please answer their phones. And we have a short and other news piece before we leave the page. FDA panel recommends vaccines for young kids. After debating safety and potential side effects, a Food and Drug Administration expert committee voted 17-0 this week to recommend that Pfizer's COVID vaccine be authorized for children ages 5 to 11. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert, says 28 million children under 12 could have access to shots by early November if regulators follow the panel's guidance. More than 1.8 million kids between 5 and 11 have been diagnosed with COVID. Over 8,600 young kids have been hospitalized for COVID, with 1 in 3 requiring intensive care, and 143 have died. A Pfizer jab for young children would be one-third the adult strength to minimize the possibility of adverse reactions. The briefing today is Peering at the Edge of the Universe. NASA is preparing to launch the most powerful space telescope ever. What will it see? Why a new space telescope? The James Webb Space Telescope will be 100 times more powerful than its predecessor, Hubble, and will be capable of capturing extremely faint infrared light from the very first galaxies at the edge of the universe. It will also be able to study planets around other stars in our own galaxy, examining their atmospheres for telltale signs of life. Originally scheduled to launch in 2010 and cost about $1 billion, Webb, a joint venture among U.S., European, and Canadian space agencies that took 10,000 people to construct, experienced a sequence of maddening delays as costs ballooned to $10 billion. But the colossal telescope finally has been shipped to French Guiana in South America, where it will be fitted into a rocket and blasted into space on December 18th, beginning the most technically ambitious mission in NASA history. Should Webb successfully reach its destination nearly a million miles from Earth, the telescope will earn its nickname, First Light Machine, as it sends back images of stars formed just 250 million years after the Big Bang. It's going to help us unlock some of the mysteries of our universe and rewrite the physics book, said Greg Robinson, Webb's program director at NASA. How does it work? The telescope utilizes several novel technologies. It relies on a 21-foot mirror made of ultra-lightweight beryllium chiseled into 18 hexagonal segments and coated with gold. Unlike most telescopes, which house a mirror or lens within a tube to block out light, Webb's mirror will be exposed to open space, relying on five parasol-like sheets of aluminum-coated plastic, each as thin as a notebook paper and as big as a tennis court, to block out light and heat from the sun, moon, and Earth. Webb includes four solar-powered cameras and sensors to collect data. How does Webb differ from Hubble? Hubble, launched in 1990, sent back dazzling images from deep space and helped astrophysicists better determine the age of the universe, the nature of black holes, and the number of galaxies. It also led to the discovery that, thanks to dark energy, the universe is expanding at an accelerating rate. That's where Webb comes in. By the time light from a 13-billion-year-old star reaches Earth, the expansion of the universe has stretched the light's wavelength into the infrared spectrum, similar to how a siren's pitch drops as an ambulance speeds away. For that reason, only an infrared-focused telescope is capable of peering into the cosmic dawn. Webb uses mirrors that capture six times more light than Hubble's and cameras with a 15 times wider view. Hubble orbits the Earth at an altitude of 340 miles. Webb will be positioned out in space, roughly four times further away from the Earth than the Moon, for maximum light gathering. How does it get to space? First, the 14,330-pound telescope must be folded origami-style to fit atop an Ariane 5 rocket. After about 30 minutes of flight, the telescope will be ejected from the rocket. That's when the nail-biting starts, says Heidi Hamill, a vice president at the Association of Universities for Research in Astronomy. To open the sun shield, about 150 release mechanisms made up of 7,000 parts must fire correctly over the course of 3 days. On the seventh day, the primary mirror will unfold. Those who are not worried or even terrified about this are not understanding what we are trying to do, said Thomas Zurbrücken, head of NASA's science office. After a roughly 30-day journey, Webb will reach Lagrange Point 2, where the gravitational tugs of the sun and the earth balance out, creating a convenient region for space telescopes to park. Webb will orbit the sun, not the earth. What will Webb look for? Answers to astrophysics' biggest questions. As it travels through space at 186,000 miles per second, light provides images on delay. The naked eye views the moon as it was 1.3 seconds ago, Jupiter as it was 40 minutes ago, and Andromeda, the nearest galaxy to ours, 2.5 million years ago. Space telescopes are often compared to time machines, collecting light emitted billions of years ago. Scientists believe Webb will be vital for studying the end of the Dark Ages, the period between the Big Bang and the formation of stars. That could reveal insights about the dark matter that makes up about 80% of the universe's mass. Webb can see back about 150 million years farther than Hubble, and thus may provide glimpses of the formation of the first stars, solar systems, and galaxies, said Caitlin Casey, an assistant professor of astronomy at the University of Texas at Austin. With Webb, she says, we're going right up to the edge of the observable universe. Read a few of the best columns of the week. We'll start with an editorial from National Review titled, A Cover-Up of Wuhan Research. We still don't know if a lab accident at the Wuhan Institute of Virology caused the COVID-19 global pandemic, said National Review. But now we do know for certain that there was a cover-up by U.S. health officials. Lawrence Tabak, Deputy Ethics Counselor at the National Institute of Health, admitted last week to Congress that the agency indirectly funded research at the Wuhan lab in 2018 and 2019, in which bat coronaviruses were genetically altered and made more infectious to humanized mice, what virologists call gain-of-function research. The grant was funneled through the private research group EcoHealth Alliance, which only recently filed a required report on that work, 2 years late. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the NIH, and EcoHealth President Peter Daszak still insist the coronavirus research was limited and did not create anything close to SARS-CoV-2, the virus that caused the global pandemic. And in fairness to the NIH, EcoHealth appears to have misled the agency about its interest in bioengineering coronaviruses. But did Fauci, Daszak, and other government scientists aggressively dismiss lab leak theories as nonsense because they wanted to avoid intense public scrutiny of EcoHealth's dangerous research? A congressional investigation is warranted. It's either filibuster or democracy. Joe Biden has finally drawn the obvious conclusion about the GOP's abuse of the filibuster, said E.J. Dionne, and remaining Democratic holdouts in the Senate need to join him. Republicans last week used the filibuster to block even a debate on a supposed compromise voting rights bill introduced by centrist Democrat Senator Joe Manchin, just as they blocked an earlier voting rights law, the For the People Act. Senate traditionalists, including Biden and Manchin, have long maintained the filibuster's requirement of 60 votes helps create open debate, compromise, and bipartisanship. But this is no longer true. Republicans have weaponized the procedural rule, which is not in the Constitution, to block virtually everything the majority tries to do, paralyzing the Senate. Meanwhile, in more than a dozen Republican-controlled states, legislatures have forced through on party lines votes a slew of voter suppression and election subversion measures. So Biden finally has reversed course, saying last week, we're going to have to move to the point where we fundamentally alter the filibuster. The choice is now between an unchanged filibuster and a functioning democracy. Republicans have made it very clear that we cannot have both. This is from the Ukraine. Vaccine fakers regret their lies. Ukraine is suffering a catastrophic COVID surge, said pediatrician Yevgeny Komorovsky. Hundreds of people are dying here every day. 546 were killed by the virus in a single day last week, and any official who claims there are still hospital beds free is lying. Bodies are piling up in hospital hallways, and morgues are full. There are still a few openings in cemeteries, but there won't be for long. This calamity is largely a result of Ukraine's abysmal vaccination rate, the worst in Europe, with only 15% of the population fully inoculated. Now, a terrible new problem has arisen. Some unvaccinated Ukrainians are finally coming around to the idea that they must get shots. But they can't, because they already bought vaccination certificates. By some estimates, half of all Ukrainians claiming to be inoculated have purchased papers. One man I know bought vax cards for his parents so they could travel to Turkey without getting shots. He has now buried them. Despite this grim situation, most Ukrainians still fear vaccination. President Volodymyr Zelensky recently posted a message on social media urging people to roll up their sleeves and had to take it down days later because of a deluge of hateful comments. If anyone still has brains left, please get vaccinated. Time for the last word, our in-depth article. Title this week is The Wellness Industry's Anti-Vaxxers. Online influencers promoting natural cures and holistic living are spreading dangerous misinformation about COVID-19 and vaccination, said Allison Chu and Razan Naklon in The Washington Post. When Christina W. received her first dose of the coronavirus vaccine earlier this year, she was terrified. Until recently, she said she believed that vaccines were so dangerous, she was willing to go into an all-out war to protect her children from receiving any immunizations. I had this deep-rooted fear that they could and possibly even would kill my children, said Christina, 26. A mother of two who lives in New Mexico and spoke on the condition that her full name not be used out of concern for her safety. Now, although she considers herself pro-vax and understands that vaccines are safe and necessary, that knowledge doesn't always quell her anxiety. These lingering concerns, she believes, are a testament to the power of the anti-vaccination narratives she was exposed to in natural parenting and alternative health groups on Facebook, some of which had convinced her that routine childhood immunizations had nearly killed her eldest son. If you've never been anti-vax and back to vaccinating, you don't quite understand the level of anxiety that can come with resuming vaccinations, Christina said. You have that logical knowledge that vaccines are just fine. They're this great thing, but emotions aren't logical. Experts say the content shared in some wellness communities has powerful emotional and psychological foundations that can cause even science-minded people to question the public health consensus on the ability of vaccines to help curb the spread of the coronavirus. Some voices within the wellness space are adept at building connection gaining trust and sowing doubt, all while appealing to widely held beliefs about healthy living. This is what makes some in the wellness community so dangerous, said Stephanie Alice Baker, a sociologist at the City University of London, who is careful to add that not everyone in the wellness space is trying to cast doubt on vaccines. It's not that the wellness community per se is conspiratorial, or that everyone has these kinds of nefarious interests when they intend to manipulate and deceive, she said. It's that once you trust leaders and influencers in this space, then when they become more conspiratorial and extreme, you are susceptible to go down that path with them because you already trust them. In some ways, the messaging and themes used by some vaccine-hesitant members of the wellness communities reflect those that have been documented in the broader anti-vaccine movement. But there are certain approaches, experts say, that especially key in on the interests and vulnerabilities of people who are invested in wellness culture. The online wellness community rose to prominence amid an erosion of trust in traditional authorities such as government, health, and science institutions and mainstream media, said Baker, co-author of Lifestyle Gurus, which explores how authority and influence are created online. This loss of faith has only been exacerbated by the pandemic, which has produced conflicting and confusing guidance from public officials. In a low-trust society, Baker said, you look for other sources to trust and where to place your trust because we can't be experts on everything. We need other authorities and influential people to guide us. In the wellness world, those authorities might include nutritionists, physical trainers, lifestyle bloggers, spiritual coaches, naturopaths, yoga teachers, and holistic health experts. Among them are online influencers with large and small followings. Sometimes, in fact, a more modest following can lead to more trust. Marketers say that micro-influencers, 10,000 to 50,000 followers, and nano-influencers, fewer than 10,000 followers, may be seen as more truthful and authentic. Ashley Taylor, who says she is a registered nurse and holistic health coach, posts frequently about freedom on Instagram to more than 51,000 followers. In one colorful post that was deleted after the publication of this article, Taylor wrote, "Approval from a three-letter agency does not override your right to autonomy and to decide what goes into your body." While she emphasized in the post caption that she wasn't trying to make decisions for her followers, she also listed multiple reasons she doesn't have a lot of trust in the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Promoting distrust can be especially effective when it plays into existing doubts about traditional institutions, doubts that often stem from legitimate concerns about health and safety or poor experiences with the healthcare system. Lydia Green, a mother of three who was a self-described anti-vaxxer for more than a decade, vividly recalls the nurse who dismissed her concerns when she thought her first child had a reaction to vaccinations. "The nurse basically blew me off and made me feel dumb," said Green, 40, who was a quality control chemist at a pharmaceutical plant before she left her job to start a family. Green said she increasingly turned to online parenting forums for guidance, where she was exposed to anti-vaccination beliefs that convinced her to stop vaccinating her children. "You just feel so lost," she said, "and these are your people, and they tell you what to do when you're not sure." In this climate of distrust, experts said, many people in the wellness community present themselves as truth seekers at constant risk of being silenced by mainstream authorities or online moderators. When these people's posts are flagged online, Green said, they often claim the platform's moderators are just trying to get the sheep to take the vaccine. Experts said it's also important to recognize potential financial motives behind the truth seeker framing. It can help influencers promote and sell alternative therapies, such as herbal tinctures and essential oils, which undergo far less regulation than vaccines and drugs approved by the FDA. Do your own research is a common refrain in anti-vaccination spaces, said Renee DeRista, the research manager at the Stanford Internet Observatory, who studies the spread of malign narratives across social networks. But it's often said by people sharing links to sites that are very aligned in a particular way, usually an anti-vaccine way. When followers of wellness influencers do try to do their own research, they often find posts that carefully cherry-pick data. For example, some influencers will point to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, known as VAERS, as evidence of widespread deaths and injuries from vaccines, while ignoring the broadly acknowledged limitation of its data. According to the Department of Health and Human Services, which co-sponsors the database with the Centers for Disease Control and the FDA, a report alone cannot be used to determine if a vaccine caused or contributed to an adverse event. Furthermore, anyone can file a report to the database with incomplete, inaccurate, coincidental, and unverified information. In some Instagram accounts featuring natural and holistic living content, vaccine misinformation is slipped in between general posts about well-being and is designed to blend in with the profile's overall visually pleasing aesthetics. Vibrant photographs of food, flowers, and landscapes, as well as serene palettes and attractive fonts. Yolanda Norris Clark, who goes by Bauhauswife on Instagram, describes herself as a writer, birth educator, free birth coach, iconoclast. She shares information about natural birth practices and photos of herself and her children in scenic landscapes. With her 46,500 followers, along with posts questioning vaccines and the medical establishment. In one post, Norris Clark shared a minimalistic text graphic that read, "The very notion of injecting a foreign substance into a human being's body to promote health is not only absurd, but utterly perverse." Anti-vaccine messaging also tends to emphasize strengthening the immune system through natural foods and fitness rather than relying on man-made interventions, experts said. The common argument, you don't need this. Here is an alternative thing for you. If you only boost your immune system and wash your hands, then you're not going to catch disease X, DeResta said. Online wellness spaces also can feel welcoming, validating, and intimate in contrast to institutions which often deliver dry and fact-based information. Many people in these spaces create a perception of openness by documenting daily activities such as meals, workout routines, and self-care regimens. Members of groups also share personal stories that are often relatable and compelling. The perceived intimacy and authenticity of these online interactions can create what experts call parasocial relationships, or a sense of closeness to a person you don't actually know. Western medicine kind of goes, here's a fact, believe it, said psychologist Doreen Dodgen-McGee, author of Deviced, Balancing Life and Technology in a Digital World. Whereas the wellness community appeals to something very unique and shiny and missed for many people in daily life, which is the sense of being known and being seen and feeling felt. That sense of community helped draw Moms Green and Christina W. into the anti-vaccine movement. After a while, you have this online family where you can post a paragraph, and then 5 minutes later, you've got all these replies and all this advice and all this support, Green said. You come to value their opinion and their thoughts and their approval even. It gets deep really quickly. But an online community also played a major role in Christina's return to vaccine acceptance. In early 2020, Christina, who had begun to question her anti-vaccination stance, joined the evidence-based Facebook group Vaccine Talk, whose co-founder emphasized in a recent profile that civility is critical to the group's success. What we envisioned when Vaccine Talk was first created was that it could be a place where people could ask questions and get answers from people who are understanding and sympathetic, but giving them evidence-based information that they can rely on, said Kate Billowitz, the group's co-founder. The people who are active in the group are there because they really care about the group, and the members that come in and ask questions are looking for guidance. For years, Christina had been convinced through online natural parenting and natural health groups that vaccination was linked to her son's severe gastrointestinal issues. But when she posted on Vaccine Talk, its members, who she felt were mostly understanding and patient, helped her find more plausible reasons for her son's condition. They helped me critically think about why I had these views, Christina said. These days, Christina is an active member of another online community, Back to the Vax, a support group for vaccine-hesitant people and former anti-vaxxers. Green, who co-founded the group, said she abandoned her anti-vaccination beliefs after she re-examined them during the pandemic. She is now in nursing school with the goal of using her education to fight vaccine hesitancy. Both women acknowledge that one of the more difficult aspects of changing their stance on vaccination was coming to terms with the fact that they had been so mistaken. It was extremely psychologically difficult to really face what I was wrong on, Christina said. When you have deep-rooted beliefs, anything that goes against that can feel like a personal attack. Green now likens the fear of being wrong to a prison. It keeps you in this box, and it doesn't allow for growth, she said. Just lean into it. You'll be fine. A version of this article originally appeared in the Washington Post. A couple of health and science articles, starting with When Vikings Came to America. It's long been known that the Vikings were the first Europeans to make the epic journey to North America. Norse sagas from the 13th century recount how hundreds of years earlier, seafarers sailed the Atlantic to a place they called Vinland. And in the 1960s, archaeologists unearthed a Viking settlement at the northernmost tip of Newfoundland. Now, a new study has pinpointed a precise date for the Vikings' presence, 1021, exactly 1,000 years ago. To get that date, scientists examined three pieces of wood found at the Viking settlement known as Leans a Meadows. Each had been cut with a metal blade, a tool the Vikings had and the local indigenous people did not. Knowing that a major solar storm occurred in 993, researchers looked in each specimen for a tree ring that bore a distinct radiocarbon signal associated with such cosmic ray events. They then counted out the later growth rings, giving them the year 1021. The tree was felled. There's much we still don't know about Leans a Meadows, including how long the Vikings lived there. All we can really say, said study co-author Michael D., is that they were definitely there that year. Why ducklings swim in a line. Ducklings have a surprisingly good grasp of fluid dynamics. According to a new study that examined why the baby birds swim in a row behind their mother, using a mathematical and numerical model, researchers at the University of Strathclyde in the UK found that when the lead duckling swims in a particular sweet spot behind its mother, a destructive wave interference phenomenon occurs. This causes the wave drag acting against the duck to turn positive, meaning that the baby bird is propelled forward as it rides the wave. The next duckling benefits from the same phenomenon, but when you get to the third duckling, the drag starts to ebb to zero. After that, ducklings act as wave passers, passing along the wave's energy to their trailing companions. It's so beautiful, lead author Ziming Yuan tells The Times he thinks the findings could have applications for maritime technology. Shipping firms might design their vessels so that they can travel in a train to reduce fuel consumption. And we'll turn on over to the talking points page to finish up. COVID, the endemic phase, is near. The light at the end of the pandemic tunnel is growing, said public health researcher Sheldon Jacobson at TheHill.com. New daily cases of COVID-19 have declined to about 70,000, less than half of the mid-September high. And as vaccination rates slowly rise and the Delta variant burns through the unvaccinated population, the virus now has fewer people to infect. But we'll never get to zero COVID cases. Instead, we're on the road to COVID becoming an endemic disease, flaring up in pockets of the country and at certain times of the year, with a manageable number of hospitalizations and a limited number of deaths. Life won't suddenly return to normal, said Segal Samuel in Vox.com. Instead, the pandemic will wane as if controlled by a dimmer switch, as regions achieve different levels of immunity and different levels of risk tolerance. The bad news is that COVID is here to stay, said Kyle Fansteel in the Idaho Falls Post Register. Infectious disease specialist Dr. Richard Nathan said that the highly infectious virus is in such widespread global circulation that sooner or later every human on the planet is going to get a COVID-19 infection. The good news is that as we transition from avoidance to living with the virus, vaccination will ward off serious illness for the vast majority of people. Immunity from infection, on the other hand, appears to wane after just 6 months. As a result, experts are increasingly skeptical that the U.S. will ever attain lasting herd immunity. Still, there are reasons for optimism, said Dr. Dhruv Kular in NewYorker.com. Mandates have helped push 78% of adults to get at least one vaccine dosed. Millions of vulnerable Americans are now getting booster shots, and the vaccine will soon be approved for children ages 5 to 11. Americans can turn COVID into a manageable problem that might only require masking on mass transit or during peak seasons, said Dr. Leanna Nguyen in WashingtonPost.com. To achieve that, we'll need widespread vaccination mandates and outpatient treatments that keep cases mild, such as Merck's remarkable antiviral pill that appears to cut hospitalizations roughly in half. We'll also need readily available rapid tests, as they have in Japan and Canada, so that people can test themselves at home before social or family gatherings. If we are armed with the right tools, endemic COVID doesn't need to dominate our lives. And here are some short notes. The U.S. State Department is in touch with 363 American citizens who remain in Afghanistan, about half of whom are actively trying to leave the country. A department official told Congress that's a significantly higher number of citizens than previously acknowledged by administration officials, who've put the figure at dozens or around 100. A $14.5 million project to restore the Jefferson Memorial's iconic white marble has just been completed. Restorers used pulsed laser beams and steam cleaning jets to blast away layers of biofilm, which consist of bacteria, fungus, and algae, that had darkened the Washington, D.C. monument. The U.S. budget deficit totaled $2.77 trillion this fiscal year. That's the second highest deficit on record. The highest, $3.13 trillion, occurred last year. This year, the government collected $627 billion more in tax revenues than it did in fiscal 2020, pulling in a record high $4.05 $1 trillion. On the poll watch, 70% of Americans believe social media companies such as Facebook and Twitter do more harm than good. 20% said the companies do more good than harm. 81% of Americans do not expect life to return to normal in the U.S. anytime soon. 26% say life will never return to normal. 32% expect it will take more than 1 year. And 23% say it will take about a year. And we'll finish out the show today with a quote from President Bill Clinton, quoted in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He says, being president is like running a cemetery. You've got a lot of people under you, and nobody's listening. And with that, we have run out of time for today's episode of the week. I hope you've enjoyed it. Be sure to listen again next time. This is Fred Woodward reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's program is generously underwritten by W.G. Alexander. At W.G. Alexander & Associates, they take pride in providing clients with the best legal counsel by concentrating on elder law, asset protection, and estate planning. They can be contacted at 919-256-7000. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The week is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please give us a call. That number is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.